The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard-issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911 and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com. MidwayUSA brand product designers have one straightforward goal: develop high-quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping. MidwayUSA.com.
Welcome to the Casting Across Fly Fishing Podcast. I'm Matthew of castingacross.com, where I explore the quarry and culture of fly fishing. You found your way to the 223rd episode of the podcast. Thanks for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. And thank you for taking time out of your day to listen to what I have to say about wading boots. 20 minutes about wading boots, you say? Yes. Here's why. A few reasons. One, I think it's important. Two, it is probably in the top five areas of interaction and feedback that I get from people who listen to the podcast and read on the website. And thirdly, it's that time of the year. This is being recorded in February. People are wanting to buy new things for the new year. So it's a timely topic. So one, I think it matters. Two, you think it matters. And three, it's a thing that people buy this time of year. So that's what we're talking about today, wading boots. So what are wading boots? I don't want to talk under you, my audience, but at the same time, some of these questions are the questions that I get. Wading boots are special boots designed to go on top of waders, specifically for using in the water. Now, are there caveats to this? Of course there's caveats. You can wear wading boots with a regular sock and wade in them. You don't need to put them over waders. You could wear them out on the town, I suppose, but that's not the kind of wading boots that we're talking about. Furthermore, there are plenty of waders that come with wading boots, but that's one of the first things that I wanted to address, is the difference between waders with integrated boots, bootfoot waders, and waders with a stocking foot or a booty on them. And the biggest difference there is going to be the benefit that you receive by having a boot that is specifically fit for your shoe when you buy them separately. Now, there are really high-end waders, and actually there's actually some economic waders that have waders that have a integrated boot that have a tying system or even a boa system, some sort of closure like a ski boot. And those are great. The issue there, though, is if one of your components fails, the entire system fails. Whereas if you have a separate boot and a separate wader, if one thing fails, then you only have to buy one new component. One of the benefits, real quick, I didn't want to touch on this. I have a whole podcast on boots and waders, kind of as a whole thing. And so I'm keeping the wader aspect of this short. You can go hop on castingacross.com and go find that podcast and some of those articles. One of the benefits of having a bootfoot wader, and I've really come to appreciate this as I've hunted more the last few years, is that you are going to get a lot more warmth by having that airflow between your core and even your thighs and the upper part of your legs, where they're going to be a lot warmer because they're close to your core, all the way down your waders into your wading boots and your feet. Your feet are going to stay a lot warmer. You're also going to have the opportunity for some sort of insulation where you're not normally going to find that in a pair of wading boots. And you're also going to run the risk of cutting off circulation if you have too many layers, too thick of pairs of socks that you try to shove into your wading boot and booty. So that's something that you can avoid if you really need circulation and you really need warmth by having a larger space for your foot to go in. You can accomplish that by getting a pair of boot foot waders, especially insulated ones. But then, of course, you're going to run into the problem of not having the kind of ankle support and really the same sort of traction options that you are going to have when you switch to a boot and a wader. So that's just a little bit of caveat on the front end. Now, another thing that I've heard of plenty of times, you know, people see people fly fishing and they see them in waders, but they oftentimes see them in waders standing in water. And this is a question that I've heard, again, a lot of times. The waders have a booty on them. They are completely waterproof until you put a hole in them, of course. And so your wading boot is going to go on top of that booty, and your wading boot is going to be completely filled with saturated and covered in water. But your foot will stay dry. Now, again, that's simple if you've been doing this for a long time. But if you've never done it before, that's something that you might need to hear. So I've had that before. I remember working in a fly shop where people picked up a pair of boots, and there's drainage ports in the boots. So there's, you know, holes on the side to kind of pump water out. There's a little mesh, you know, places for that so that water can come out, but silt doesn't get in. People will say, well, my feet are going to get wet. Well, yeah, again, if you wear it by itself, then yeah, your foot's going to get wet. And there's options around that. You know, you can get a muck boot, or you can get a rain boot if you're just going ankle deep, but that's not what wading boots are for. Wading boots are designed to give you traction and stability on the water. And that's why I think they're so important. Going back to the very first thing that I mentioned as to why I'm having this podcast episode, I think wading boots are one of the most important things you can spend your money on. I said this about sunglasses and fly line before, where a small investment gets you a significant increase in value. You for a fly line, you can go from a good fly line to a great fly line, $50 more. Sunglasses, the same thing. Wading boots, I would put in the exact same category. Bottom of the barrel of wading boots are going to work. And I fished out of these cheap, flimsy canvas wading boots with felt soles for probably 5 or 7 years when I first started fly fishing. And I did fine. But again, I was younger and I was a little bit more fleet and agile. But I've really come to appreciate high-end wading boots, especially when I'm on the water all day. And you also usually get better components. So your wading boots, just like your shoes, are one of the most important things for your physical health, as well as your, you know, just from walking, and then also keeping you upright when you are walking. And as much as that matters when you're walking in your office, around a track, on the sidewalk, wherever it may be, that is exacerbated when you are walking through the woods and when you're walking in the water. And so here's the kind of the breakdown that I like to think of when I come to talking to people about wading boots. You have three options. And one, the first one, is really not even a wading boot. It's more for wet wading. And that's where you find the wet wading sandals and shoes. And virtually every one of the major manufacturers has one of these options. It is some sort of shoe, like a low top. Sometimes they're a high top. Sometimes they zip up. Sometimes they tie. Sometimes they're sandals with multiple straps or something like that. Or sometimes they even are just they go over your shoe or over your sandal that you already have, and they add a little bit of traction on the bottom of them, some sort of strap-on situation. That is great if you have a lot of stability on your own, if you are going to be going someplace that does not have a very difficult bottom of a stream bank, or if you're hiking in using one pair of shoes, then you switch over to something like that because it's light and you can pack it easily. I personally have a couple pairs of kayaking shoes that I use for this. I used to just use sandals, sandals that had a little bit of toe covering on them, but I have switched over to the kayaking shoes because they have a sticky rubber bottom, and it is a sticky rubber that blows what I have used and seen in fly fishing specific shoes. It blows them away. That being said, there's some very good fly fishing shoes out there. Now, people have asked me, can I buy these fly fishing shoes or the kayaking shoes that I've talked about before on podcasts and written about on websites? And can I buy those and put those over my waders? Yes, you could. But you're not going to get a few things. You are not going to get the kind of stability if you wanted to use these shoes on a long day of wading. You're not going to get the protection for your waders that you would with a high top boot, because one of the places where you're going to run into problems is by your feet and your ankles sliding around on the stream bottom and walking to the water. And if you bump into something that will penetrate your wading wader material, that's where you're going to run into leaks. And that neoprene down by your foot and by your ankle is going to be repairable, but it's not going to be as resilient to multiple repairs. And once you repair it, now you have a weak spot. And so that's point one. Point two is your sizing is going to be all wonky. So if you've ever wet waded in a traditional wading boot before, you know that you have to layer up on socks or wear a sock and a neoprene booty. So, you know, basically just the bottom ankle down of a pair of waders separate from waders that you can buy to make that boot fit because they're sized differently. These wading shoes and these kayaking shoes and just sandals are going to be sized like a normal shoe. And so there's no accommodation for all that extra material that would have to go in if you were using a pair of waders. That being said, these are great for a second pair. If you like to do a lot of wet wading, if you, like I mentioned before, like to do backpacking, and you have to walk in a good distance to get to your water, and you can switch your walking, your trail shoes, your boots out for a pair of wet wading shoes, having a pair like this is incredibly versatile and very, very helpful. I also like something like this if I'm in a canoe or a kayak in the warmer weather months, where I might have to be hopping in and out of the boat, not necessarily in the water, but on the bank of the water, and I don't want to get my normal shoes wet and muddy. Having something like this that dries out quickly is really clutch for those situations. So that is like the bottom end, not from a value standpoint, but from like a versatility standpoint and a support standpoint. The next thing that I would always suggest for people, especially if you're just getting into fly fishing or you're just getting a pair of wading boots, maybe you do a lot of stuff and you have a lot of gear out in the salt, but you're wanting to come in inland and fish for trout for a little bit, just get a lightweight, simple pair of boots. These are going to run between $100 and $150. And I didn't mention that before. For the wading shoes, I mean, you're talking some really top-notch kayaking shoes around $100. And then some of the ones that get put out by the fly fishing brands that like have an integrated neoprene collar for your ankle and stuff like that, probably over $200. So that's another reason why I like to go to the kayaking shoes. But as far as the lightweight wading boots, you're going to find things that are incredibly light. They drain fast. They dry out quickly. They provide you with significant traction. You're going to be able to find those for about $150. Now, boots like this are going to be your workhorses. They're going to be boots that you are able to slide on under most situations and most circumstances. They're not going to be very heavy, and they're going to go with you anywhere that you want to go. And this is kind of your normal middle-of-the-road wading boot. But why would you want to go from that? And we're going to talk more about wading boot features here after I get through the next category, because these next two kind of had a lot of similarities in distinction to the lightweight shoe. Why would you want to go from a lightweight, kind of mid-priced boot up to a premium heavy-duty boot? A few reasons. One, you're going to be on the water a lot. If you've ever walked a convention hall, if you've ever taken a vacation in a European city where you're walking a lot, if you just happen to be on your feet all the time, you know how much of a difference new shoes versus old shoes make, how much of a difference quality shoes versus kind of just run-of-the-mill shoes makes. If you work in boots, you know the difference between a pair of well-made boots and something that just comes out of a department store shelf. The same thing is true with fly fishing wading boots. So you'll be fine with those mid-priced boots. And I fish probably 75% out of my mid-priced boots. But when I'm going on trips, when I am going to be walking on uneven surfaces, when I am going to be standing still for a long time, I like to switch to my heavy-duty, high-end boots because they provide a much more rigid foot base. They provide a lot more ankle support. And what this leads to is it reduces fatigue over the course of a day or multiple days. This is something that if you have stability issues, if you have foot ankle, knee, hip, back problems, then upgrading your boot will provide you some relief and mitigate the effects of being on your feet for a long period of time. And this circles back to the value thing. Like, if you want to spend thousands of dollars on a trip where you're going to be waiting for hours and hours and hours, day after day after day, then spending another $100 on the front for a pair of boots that you're going to be able to keep for that trip and the next trip and your time on your local water, it makes all the sense in the world, assuming you can afford it. But if you're affording $1,000+ trips, then you can certainly shell out a couple $100 for a good pair of wading boots. But I have both in my rotation. I mean, I've got even more boots than that, some that just kind of are sitting around waiting for somebody to who's fishing with me to use. But I have those three pairs of boots. I have the kayaking shoes that I wear when I'm wet wading or when I'm just being speedy. I have my normal, everyday workhorse, lightweight wading boots. And then I've got my heavy duty boots that I will use if I am going on a stream that is incredibly slippery, or if I'm spending multiple days upright in a pair of boots. So that's kind of the range. Now, beyond that, what kind of features should you look for? By far, the most important feature when you are like looking beyond, does this boot fit me and does this boot provide what I need for stability, is traction. And this is what separates wading boots from just buying a pair of discount hiking boots and throwing them on over your waders. Which you could do, and it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, but the benefit of having a pair of wading boots, real quick, if you do that, they're never going to dry out. It's going to be disgusting. They're going to just decompose on you if you just buy a pair of hiking boots that happens to be sized up like two sizes and throw them over your wading boots. They're just going to be wet forever. All right. Wading boots are designed to dry out. You buy a pair of wading boots. You're looking for the sole. What is the traction like? Now, there are a number of options these days, and you see them all over the place. Felt is still a thing. And if you are fishing in a place that has very, 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 if even non-existent risk of moving microscopic organisms that can lead to contamination, then this is a great foot base to use is felt. But felt, because it is a fabric and because it is super porous, will hold on to contaminants that can go from stream to stream. And biologists do believe that that has what has caused things like Didymo and other invasives to spread from stream to stream. But if you're staying in one place, then felt's fine. If you're staying in an area where this is not an issue, felt is fine. If you are willing to bleach your boots, then felt is fine. Felt is a really great option. But what I use more often than anything is a rubber sole, a sticky rubber sole with studs. A sticky rubber sole with studs is great because it is going to give you full traction on virtually every surface, whether it be pavement. And I try to stay off the pavement in my studs because, like, if you've ever had metal cleats, you know it's just going to wear them down real quickly. But it'll also work on mud. It'll work on grass. It'll work on snow. It'll work on ice, which felt and snow and ice don't get along very well. But then at various stream bottoms, it's going to work pretty well. It is more versatile than felt on stream bottoms. It's not as effective in some situations, but it is going to be more versatile. Now, some people say, I don't like fishing in studs because it scares the fish. Well, if you're stomping around, you're going to scare fish regardless. So is it a thing? It's going to be a thing. But is it a thing that should steer you away from them? Absolutely not. And I've actually fished in bars. So they are aluminum bars. So it's a softer metal, which will allow it to actually, with your weight, I mean, your 150, 200, 250, whatever it is, pounds of weight on those metal bars as they step onto a rock, it is actually going to deform ever so slightly and provide you with some traction. So I've fished in plain rubber. I've fished in rubber with studs. I've fished in rubber with bars. And they have all worked great. It depends on where you're going to be. I have a pair of boots that I fish in the salt where they are almost like little cleats, like multi-toothed little bolts that are on the bottom of a pair of rubber boots. So this is great if I'm walking on incredibly uneven surfaces all sorts of little, you know, ocean life and barnacle-y stuff. Those are very helpful for that. So you have a lot of options at your disposal. And I usually don't throw out a lot of brands, but if you need a lot of options, then Corkers is the way to go because they have interchangeable soles. And people have been skeptical about these. I'm sure they have failed. I have not seen them fail. I personally think that they are incredibly well-designed such that if something were to go wrong in the foot of that boot where that sole attaches, there are a couple of other design features that's going to keep that sole attached. And so they give you the option of, like, I mean, I have a pair of Corkers downstairs and I've got four different soles for them. They give me the option of bringing those with me or using my same high-end boot in different situations. But this could be the situation, if that's not your preference, if that's not your style, that what you could do is have your midweight boot be your, you know, your rubber, and your heavyweight boot be your rubber with studs or whatever it might be. But give yourself that versatility, give yourself those options, and talk to people that fish where you fish. What do they like? What do they use? What have they found that isn't effective? And get that sort of feedback. The next thing I would say is go try them on. You can buy boots online and play the game of sending them back, but go try them on. Any fly shop worth its salt, any big box outdoor store worth its salt is going to have a pair of waders or a pair of neoprene boots for you to try on, neoprene booties, excuse me, for you to try on as you try on your wading boots. More often than not, you're going to be able to buy boots that are the same size as your shoe size. They have been sized up to accommodate the fact that you're going to be in heavy socks and neoprene booties. That being said, if you fall at a half size, the general rule is to go up. So if you generally wear a 9.5, buy a pair of 10 wading boots, and you can always add more sock. Wading socks, that's a whole other topic, but get something that's wool. Get something that is not going to be give you too much compression, and also consider getting a liner sock that is going to provide just another moisture wicking option, as well as a little bit of an air barrier to allow that heat to circulate in your foot. So going up a half size is not the worst thing in the world. I'd actually prefer to do that than find a pair of boots that fit snugly and just right on my waders with my socks on underneath them. The next thing to think about, and it might be the last thing I mention, is closure systems. I have boots that have shoelaces, and I have boots that have boa systems. I like both of them. People say, oh, if the boa breaks, then there's going to be a problem. Yes, you're right. If a shoelace breaks, there's going to be a problem. And honestly, replacing a boa system, they get a little tool and a little bit of wire, it is not that much more complicated than replacing a shoelace. And if it happens out in the woods, you know, you mess with a wet pair of boot laces where the eyelets are small, and your options for fixing that shoelace are actually not that great. The best bet for you is to go back to your truck, go back to your car, get that extra pair of boot laces, which you'd always have for all sorts of reasons. It's as important as duct tape. You're going to have to go back and do that. I would say the same thing for if you have boa closure. Have an extra wire and the little tool that you need to do it. It's not that hard once you kind of realize how to do it. Materials, I guess there's a couple more things. Materials, you know, look for boots that are designed well. And these days, all the major manufacturers are going to design their boots well as far as what materials they use where. You're going to get toe protection, you're going to get ankle protection, you're going to get things that are more rubbery around the toe and around the heel cap and around your ankles, less fabrics and nylons in those places. But try them on. Walk around the store. You're never going to be able to perfectly replicate the circumstances and situations you're going to find yourself in when you're out in the woods. However, give it a shot. And that's going to give you a better idea of what to do. And worst case scenario, if it's a pair of boots you hate, and then you find something that you like better, now you have a pair of backup boots. Or like I said, I've got boots downstairs that are perfectly fine. They're just not my favorite. And so they're the ones that I let people borrow, assuming they have a similar foot size than I do. So if you want more information about wading boots, go to castingacross.com. I actually have a video on YouTube. I think it might be my most watched video. Where I walk through and showing examples and the brands that I use of wading boots, going through those three kind of categories that I talk about. And that's where I get a lot of the feedback on wading boots is from that video. People will comment on YouTube or they'll email me or direct message me about that. So because I got like three or four in the last week, I figured, you know what, do a podcast on this. So hopefully you have a good pair of wading boots that keeps you upright, keeps you comfortable, keeps you focusing on fishing, not about how your feet hurt. If you have specific questions about this, don't hesitate to reach out. Matthew@castingacross.com. Happy to give you opinions on brands, on designs, on styles, on what might work where you live and fish. But for that last question, you know, you're probably better off asking your local fishing friends and fly shop. This weekend, castingacross.com. First article is called Trout Are Tough. Trout Are Tough. Spectacular picture I found from a photographer for this one of a heron doing business to a fish. I think the fish is dead, but it looks like he's fighting back. But anyway, check it out. Trout Are Tough. But the premise of this is, you know, we think trout are like these delicate little snowflakes. But the reality is that they put up with a lot more than like most mammals do. They put up with a lot more than most birds do. And so, yes, you can do a lot of damage to a fish if you're not careful, but they're a lot tougher than we give them credit for. So I talk about that from some, you know, science stuff and also from some anecdotal stuff. And Wednesday's article is called Now I Have Him. And I got a puppy. So this is something that's been in the works for a few months now, but I wanted to surprise my family, and a surprise it was, and a hit it was as well. So this little guy is a lab husky mix, and he is just all sorts of fun for the last 4 days that we've had him. And I'm excited about seeing how he fits into outdoor activities. I am not too big of a man to admit that I thought I'm not going to get a dog and take it fly fishing with me. Well, now I'm thinking like, I don't know, man, if he can hack it, that's going to be a lot of fun. So we'll see how that goes. I'm sure this little guy is going to be a part of Casting Across in some way, shape, or form in the coming months and years. This week's recommendation on Casting Across is an audiobook. Now, I've talked in episodes past and on the website about how you can get on your library's website and you can download apps like Libby or Hoopla. Hoopla is, it's fantastic because you get an allotment of free downloads every month. They have ebooks, they have audiobooks. And this month, I've been listening to John Gearock's most recent book, Dumb Luck and the Kindness of Strangers. I'll probably write more about it sometime in the coming weeks and just add it to my book recommendations. But it's just been so much fun. You know, going to work, I've got my podcasts that are kind of more serial style, news-based, things like that that I listen to. But mixing this in and getting just that fun little fly fishing injection throughout the course of the day and the week has been fantastic. So if you have time in the car, I mean, if you're listening to me, you obviously, you know, listen to things off of your phone or off of your computer, check out Dumb Luck and the Kindness of Strangers. It's available on Hoopla, which there's a very good chance that's available through your local library. And if not, I'm sure you can get it on Audible for a few bucks, or if you have some or other audiobook subscription service. But I'll just put a link to the book itself, Dumb Luck and the Kindness of Strangers, up on this podcast show notes over at castingacross.com. Thanks for listening to the Casting Across Fly Fishing Podcast. Please subscribe in your favorite podcast app and then rate the podcast on iTunes. Then head over to castingacross.com for 3 posts a week on the people, places, and things that go into the pursuit of fish.
I'm Will Cooper, and you're listening to Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast on the Waypoint Podcast Network. Stick around as I bring you more stories and interviews from veteran hunters and industry professionals who inspire us all to be better equipped in the woods and in life.
Brave anglers search for the one they call king, but who will take his throne? Tune in to Waypoint TV's Battle for Silver, Saturday, May 18th from 12 to 6 p.m. Eastern, presented by Abyss Battery. Waypoint TV.